Hey, it's Paul here again. Just a quick reminder that today's episode is one of our very first episodes that we recorded and released, and it's before we started using immersive storytelling techniques like sound design and music and narration. Now, of course, the story itself is very powerful and very relevant to today, but if you enjoy those types of elements like sound design and narration and music, then make sure to listen to some of our newer content that we've released as well. And now, on to the show.
He said, "Jimmy, I need to talk to you." He said, "I feel like I need to tell you that the night you left to meet your folks in Denver, the rig you were working on exploded, and everybody that you had worked with for two summers were killed. You just need to know how lucky you were."
I'm Paul Hastings, and you're listening to Compelled, real people telling true stories about God's compelling love working in their lives. You're listening to episode 13 of our podcast, meaning that after today, we only have two more episodes left in our season. So whether you've been listening since day one or you're just joining us for the first time, we're glad you're here. To the public, Jim Warren was an ordinary school counselor living in Wichita, Kansas, helping teenagers navigate their way through high school. But few, if any, people knew the dark secret that Jim held. He had been a habitual shoplifter for decades. He was a heavy drug user, and he held a hatred of God and the church. Jim lived his double life for many years until one day when he was 70, God showed up. Well, today I am blessed to be here with my guest, Jim Warren of Derby, Kansas. And Jim, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're very welcome.
Jim, for those that are listening, would you mind introducing yourself and telling us a little about your family?
I grew up in Muskogee, Oklahoma. My dad sold clothes. I was born during the Depression. We had very little money.
Yeah.
People didn't buy clothes much during the Depression. Daddy was paid on commission, and if he brought home $50 a week, we thought we were rich. Material-wise, I had everything I needed. I never went hungry. I never missed a meal. Always had something to wear. My folks sometimes would go to church, and sometimes they didn't. Hmm. When they were in church, Mother taught Sunday school. Daddy taught BTU, that stands for Baptist Training Union, is what they used to call it. I don't think they have it anymore. As I got older, I developed a strong distaste for church. I never believed it. I never believed there's anything to it.
Really?
A lot of times, if they wanted me to go to church, they'd have to drag me to church. Daddy'd get on one arm and Mom on the other, and they'd force me in the car, and off we went to church.
Wow.
It was a battle. Sundays in my house were hell. I don't know any other way to describe it.
Hmm.
It got to the point where I hated to see Sunday come. And I remember one summer, Mother was teaching Vacation Bible School, and she expected me to go, I think, and I told her I ain't going. Period. No, you can't make me go. I'm not going. And they proceeded to get me to the church. And I escaped the room. I went down in the boiler room of the church. Now, this is in the heat of the summer. It was probably July or August, one of those hot months. I went down the boiler room and almost died from heat stroke. That's how bad I didn't want to go to Vacation Bible School. They carried me out of there. Somebody found me. They carried me out. And I remember them reviving me out on the lawn.
Oh, man.
Through elementary school, junior high school, and high school, I became really, really bad.
Hmm.
In elementary school, I fought. I don't know that I picked a fight, but I sure didn't run from them.
Yeah.
And I was almost expelled from elementary school. 1940, 41, 42, the First Baptist Church hired this young fella named Dr. W.A. Criswell. And I'll never forget him. If he'd walked through that door right now, I'd recognize him.
Really?
But anyway, that Sunday morning, for some strange reason, I went to church with them, and I don't remember having a fight with them.
And how old were you at this point?
11 years old.
11 years old.
He was a fiery preacher. Mm. Man, he was fiery. I'll never forget that guy. And he would scare the daylights out of kids. I mean, there was something about him. He would just scare the daylights out of you. Mm. But I remember this particular Sunday, he gave the invitation, and it was along the line, you know, that you might die next week, and if you die, it's too late, and you're going straight to hell, and blah, 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 and he scared me. Next Sunday, it was the same thing. And fire and brimstone, man, I'm telling you, it was worse the second Sunday than it was the first Sunday. And when he gave that invitation, man, I shot down the front like a cannon.
Yeah.
And of course, he did his thing, you know, introduced me to the church. Well, Jimmy's accepted Jesus and on and on and on and on. And I didn't even know what he was talking about. And I got baptized. He never once, after he baptized me, he never once came up and said, "Jimmy, how you doing? Hmm. Is there anything I can do for you? Would you like to come in and chat with me sometime?" He never, ever said another word to me, nor did any other adult in that church. And I thought, man, if this is what Christians are like, I don't want any part of them. And 2 or 3 weeks after that, I shoplifted a carton of cigarettes. And I walked a little further, and I shoplifted an extension cord. So there I was with a carton of cigarettes and an extension cord that I'd stolen 3 weeks after I was baptized.
Yeah.
Shoplifted.
Yeah.
And so immediately, I became probably the most popular kid in fifth grade, because every day after school I would take our fifth grade classroom down the sewer, pass out the cigarettes, and we'd smoke.
Wow.
So that was kind of a turning point for me, spiritually and every other way. I learned that you can get things pretty easy if you steal them as opposed to paying for them.
Hmm.
And
how old were you?
I was early 12.
Yeah.
12 years old.
Yeah.
And so I did a lot of thievery back then, a lot of it. I would steal stuff for other people if they'd give me something for it. 1952, my folks went to Paris, Texas for the weekend. Daddy's sister lived there. They left me in charge of the house.
Yeah.
I was a senior in high school.
Yeah.
Big mistake on their part.
Yeah. Yeah.
They left. I had a bunch of guys, I would guess maybe 15 of them that I knew to be pretty rotten people.
Mm.
And I invited them over to the house, and we decided we're going to call the bootleggers, and we're going to have a real party.
Yeah.
So we called 2 or 3 bootleggers, and they came out and priced their stuff, and we bought a lot of liquor. A lot. We bought the hard stuff, whiskey, bourbon, gin, but we all got skunk drunk. I mean, it was bad. Everybody started vomiting all over.
Oh, man.
Some of them chose to vomit in the floor furnace. Some of them on the beds.
Oh.
Some of them, you name it. That house was practically destroyed, and the folks were due back the next day.
So how did your parents react when they found out?
2 or 3 people in that block belonged to First Baptist Church in Muskogee.
Yeah.
So they spread it around all over the church that Jimmy had a huge party in their house, and they kept the whole block awake. And here Mama's teaching Sunday school. And BTU, Daddy's teaching Sunday school in BTU, and their son's throwing a drunken brawl in their house and practically destroyed the house. And they weren't real happy with me over that. Mother was so embarrassed. I think word got to Mr. Mills. Ellis was a deacon and a Sunday school teacher at the church, and he had some connection with an oil company in Artesia, Colorado, and he decided that I might be a good candidate to go out the summer of 1952 and the summer of 1953, when, between college, semesters of college, go out there and work on an oil rig. Well, I went out there, but what Mr. Mills didn't know was that they hired most of their roughnecks. I went out, I was going to be a they hired most of their roughnecks out of the Colorado State Penitentiary.
Oh, no.
in Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, no. That,
and you think I didn't get an education. I learned the tricks of the trade as far as crime's concerned. I learned how to plan a bank robbery. I had it drawn out schematically. I mean, things like that. It didn't help my spirituality very much. I grew to feel really comfortable with them, and I went back the second summer, and I had finished my 2.5 months there. I was getting ready to go back for my sophomore year in college. Get home. Ellis Mills called. That's the guy that sent me out there. He called and he said, Jimmy, I need to talk to you. He said, I feel like I need to tell you that the night you left to meet your folks in Denver, the rig you were working on exploded, and everybody that you had worked with for two summers were killed.
Oh, wow.
And he said, you just need to know how lucky you were that you left that night.
Oh, man.
You love Christian testimonies. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to Compelled. But imagine if you could enjoy Compelled stories from Christians throughout the ages, including those who've already passed away. Well, that's what our friends at YWAM Publishing are doing through their Christian Heroes book series by retelling the incredible stories of Christians like George Mueller, a man of prayer who ran an orphanage for 10,000 children in England, who trusted God to miraculously provide food and shelter for those orphans, sometimes on a daily basis. Or Elizabeth Elliot, whose husband was murdered by the Aka tribe in Ecuador, but chose to forgive and move in with the tribe to share the gospel with them. Or Brother Andrew, who during the height of the Cold War smuggled Bibles to Christians behind the Iron Curtain, all under the noses of communist border guards who could have imprisoned him for life or worse. These are the types of stories that YWAM Publishing is printing, and their books are written for kids ages 10 and above, but frankly, adults love them too. They've published 50 of these biographies so far, and we just partnered with YWAM Publishing to bring you 5 of my favorite stories. These are the Christians that have inspired my faith and millions of others for decades, which include the 3 testimonies I just mentioned, as well as Corrie Ten Boom and Amy Carmichael. We're calling it the Compelled Christian Heroes Bundle, and I actually worked with YWAM to select these 5 specific stories, and they agreed to drop the price in half just for Compelled listeners. So it's $30 and includes free U.S. shipping. To buy this bundle for yourself or to give to a friend, visit compelledpodcast.com/YWAM. That's the letters YWAM. compelledpodcast.com/YWAM. And trust me, if you love listening to stories on Compelled, you're going to love reading these stories too. Have you ever wondered why traditional math curriculums seem like they have a one-size-fits-all approach? Well, that's because they do. The curriculum writers are making assumptions about how quickly your child is progressing, even if your child is actually struggling with a concept, which, if left unchecked, can become a major hurdle to learning and hurt their confidence. That's one of the reasons why CTC Math exists. It's an adaptive online approach that automatically changes depending on your child's unique learning needs. By adapting to your student's pace, learning becomes not only more effective, but also more enjoyable. Can you imagine? No more tears about fractions. The interactive questions change in difficulty based on how your child is progressing, ensuring that they're challenged at the level that's right for them. Not too hard, not too easy. It's just like having a math tutor who knows exactly what they need when they need it. And as a parent, you'll love the detailed reports. You'll get to see their progress in real time and celebrate their victories and understand their challenges. Ready to give your child's math education a major boost? Just visit ctcmath.com and sign up for a free trial and experience firsthand how personalized learning can transform your child's approach to math. Again, that's ctcmath.com.
When I went to college, I pledged Lambda Chi Alpha fraternity because I wanted the meanest, ugliest group on campus. And I found it. It was bad. I mean, there was always a drunken party going on.
Yeah.
Always. And I got into a lot of drinking, a lot of partying, hard liquor, whiskey, gin, stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
Got into a lot of smoking and decided I wanted to major in psychology. And I got my bachelor's degree in psychology, went to graduate school to work on my master's degree in psychology. The college years were filled with what I call preacher bashing, along with religion and everything to do with religion. You know, we didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
I partied for 4 years. It was almost nonstop, late at night, sometimes all-nighters. And when I was working on my master's degree, that's where I met my first wife. And we had a horrible, horrible relationship.
Mm.
I mean, it was beyond belief. It got physical. She stabbed me with a pen and stabbed me with a fork once, and I had to go to the hospital for that. Didn't have a car, so I had to walk to the hospital. I put up with her for 10 years. I put up with her. She put up with me. It was probably, I'm sure it was a combination of both.
Yeah.
And finally, in 1967, she tried to kill me with milk. You remember milk bottles, or is that before your time?
I know that they used to be
glass milk bottles. The night of my divorce, I didn't know what to do with myself. And I got in the car and I started driving. I drove out on Oliver to WSU. And that was the hippie era. The hippie started around 1960.
Hmm.
And this was the era of the hippies. And I was lonesome. Even a bad marriage sometimes is better than nothing. And I didn't have anything. I mean, I just finished my divorce, and I parked the car and I saw a bunch of these hippies going up to this house, big old two story house. And I went up and I knocked on the door, and I can't even imagine that I did this. And I said, "You all are having a party, aren't you?" And the guy said, big old long hair down to his waist and beard.
Yeah.
Big guy.
Yeah.
Looked like he might have weighed 300 pounds and he could have whacked me and knocked me from here to kingdom come.
Yeah.
But I said, "You all are having a party. Would you mind if I joined you? I said, "I just got a divorce and I don't know what to do with myself." He puts his arms around me. He says, "Well, come on in. Glad to have you." And it was full of hippies.
Yeah.
And it was full of marijuana smoke.
Yeah,
and I never had smoked marijuana before. I'd done a lot of drinking, but I had never smoked marijuana. He says, "You're a drinker, aren't you?" And I was a drinker. I said, "Yeah, I've drank a few." He pours out this great big glass of whiskey. I don't know. I don't remember what it was. I couldn't find my way home when that party was over.
Yeah,
that was what I did the night of my divorce.
Yeah,
I proceeded from that point to, I got into drugs. And I had a source for getting Acapulco Gold. It's the strongest marijuana that there is.
Hmm.
It's so strong, you have to smoke it with a water pipe to cool it off before you inhale it.
Hmm.
You take a drag off of a marijuana cigarette and you don't have that thing hooked up to a water pipe, You're down on the floor screaming, trying to get a breath. I mean, it's that strong. I think my life was about as rotten as it could be for somebody that was not in prison.
And you were still working at the school?
Oh, yeah.
At the same time?
Oh, yeah. And not only that, but about this time, the superintendent calls me in, and he says, we're starting a drug program called Dope Stop, and the faculty's gotten together, and we've decided we want you to sponsor that.
They wanted you to sponsor the drug program.
They didn't know I was smoking marijuana and getting drunk every night and smoking marijuana. They didn't know that I came to work stoned half the time. Wow. I'm a good faker. They said, we want you to be in charge of the Dope Stop program, and we're going to send you to the Twin Cities for a week's study and workshop in Dope Stop. We want you to take charge of it for the Derby Public Schools, and that included the elementary, junior high, and high school.
Oh, man.
I had the whole works, and there I was at night smoking that stuff like crazy and drinking my head off. And so they put me officially in charge of Dope Stop.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Dope Stop. And there wasn't a bigger doper around than I was.
Yeah.
So I was afraid to tell them no, and I decided what I'm going to do. I'm going to arrange the El Dorado Penitentiary, and I'm going to see if I can arrange for every week for some of the people that were doing life to come and talk to our elementary, junior high, and high school kids. So I need at least three of them every week. The nastier they are, the better I'm going to like it. I want to show the kids the horror of drug use. Whether it helped or not, I don't know. The kids loved it.
Yeah.
They loved me. The kids loved me.
Yeah.
They thought it was that I was the perfect. And then I'd go at night and Wednesday nights I always went out the Cotillion Ballroom and got skunk drunk every time I went out there. I had a lot of sleazy friends that went out there, and a lot of people go to church on Wednesdays. I was at the Cotillion getting drunk or stoned on marijuana or hashish. I proceeded to really make a mess out of my life. And about that time, they assigned what you're going to sponsor. I go to work that day, first day on the job at the high school. They had me down to be in charge of the Youth for Christ Club.
The Youth for Christ
Youth
Club.
Youth for Christ Club. I went to the principal, and I said, really, I think I'm not really very well qualified to do Youth for Christ. I said, I'd appreciate it if you'd give me something else.
Did they know that you were an atheist?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Nobody knows this. It took 3 years before I could get rid of Youth for Christ, and it was a celebration.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so happy that I managed to get rid of that.
Did you continue doing drugs even after you met Tony, your wife today?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I did. There was a lot that she didn't know about me when we met in 1976. We dated 2 years, broke up, and we didn't get married till 1993, which was 25 years ago. I never could get Tony to smoke the marijuana or drink. She didn't do it. She wasn't in the church or anything, but I did it. And all this, I was smoking cigarettes too. It's a wonder I can even breathe.
Yeah.
It's a miracle that I'm even here.
Yeah.
I should have been dead 20 years ago.
Yeah.
When Tony and I decided that we were going to get married, I said, I don't know whether I can do this or not. I said, but I want to tell you one thing. If we ever get married, don't ever mention church to me.
Yeah.
Don't ever invite me to go to church. Don't ever make me feel guilty about going to church. That's going to be a topic that we don't talk about. I said, if you want to go to church, be my guest. But I said, I ain't going. And she agreed to that, and we got married. I wasn't particularly happy about it. I didn't have the enthusiasm that most people have when they get married.
And how long have y'all been married now?
25 years.
And you were almost 60 when you got married?
About 60, yeah.
I just want to take a second here and thank you for just sharing honestly and candidly about what your life was like before being saved. I know that to many people, including myself, I mean, we would have just totally written you off. I mean, we would have just said that there's no way that God would eventually save someone like you who had just constantly rejected him for 70 years. But thankfully, God had other plans. How did you eventually come to find Christ?
I started having some problems with my hip.
Hmm.
Got to where I could hardly walk, and one day I told her, I said, I got to go to the emergency and what have you. And I went to the emergency, and so I went in. He gave me a shot, and the next day or two, it started feeling pretty good. And he said it would be helpful if you started a walking program. And the strangest thing happened. I started hearing these church songs in my head. Climb, climb up Sunshine Mountain, and Amazing Grace, some of those songs that were so popular back then that you don't hear it much of anymore, one right after the other, after the other, after the other, that kept me awake at night. And the only thing I can figure out why they were familiar to me is when my folks made me go to church.
Back when you were a kid?
When I was little. I thought I was going crazy. I called my brother-in-law. I said, I know I told you a long time ago I didn't want to talk religion with you or anything, but I said, I've changed my mind. I said, these songs keep popping in my head, and I said, I can't get rid of them, and I feel like I'm going crazy. And Don says, well, that's easy. He says, God's trying to tell you something. And I thanked him for his help, and I thought about it. And then we went to Las Vegas in 2002.
And you were almost 70 at this point, like you were a 69 or something?
Yeah, something like that. And I decided people hit it rich in Las Vegas all the time, and I'm going to be one of them. It was kind of, the first day or two, we played the slot machine. She played the penny machine quite a bit, and I was playing the nickels and dimes and quarters for 2 or 3 days. And then I think the day before we left was on a Sunday, and I had the strangest feeling coming over me. God didn't tell me anything, but I know a dark cloud came down on me in that casino, and I imagined that God was telling me, you shouldn't be in here on Sunday gambling. And then it persisted. I didn't put any more money in the slot machine, and I started getting sadder and sadder and sadder. And I went back in the bathroom, and I started bawling like a baby. And anyway, I didn't tell Tony anything. I never mentioned this to her.
If you like to stay up to date with current events, then you'll especially appreciate another podcast I enjoy called The World and Everything in It. It's a daily news program, about 30 minutes long, delivered every weekday morning by Christian journalists from around the world. And they aren't just rehashing the current headlines. They're actually doing investigative, boots-on-the-ground journalism while providing biblical, cultural analysis. I started listening to their show about 5 years ago when we first launched Compelled. And since then, they've become one of my go-to sources for understanding current events from a biblical perspective. But they pull no punches. In fact, they tell the facts just as they are, even when it requires sharing uncomfortable truths. Maybe that's why they're one of the Apple Podcast's top 100 news programs. Join me and thousands of other Christians from around the world who listen to The World and Everything in It. Just search for The World and Everything in It in your podcast app or visit WNG.org. As a teenager, I had so many friends whose lives were transformed by attending a Worldview Academy leadership camp. For many of them, it was the highlight of their summer because it was such a spiritually engaging experience. And today, Worldview Academy's mission continues. If you have a student between 13 to 18 and you care about equipping them with biblical truth so that they're prepared to stand firm and engage with the culture, then Worldview Academy is what you're looking for. Worldview Academy's week-long summer intensives cover topics in apologetics, servant leadership, and evangelism, all while building deep friendships with like-minded students. Your student will engage with 25 hours of interactive teaching, addressing questions like, how do I know that the Bible is true? Does God really exist?
Who defines what is right or wrong? And what difference does that make in my life? Since 1996, over 42,000 students have called this one of the best weeks of their life. And with 18 summer intensives all across the country, there's certain to be one near you. Learn more and get 10% off your student's camp registration as a Compelled listener by using the promo code COMPELLED at worldview.org. Register for camp today at worldview.org while spots are still available. And remember to get 10% off using the promo code COMPELLED.
We came home, and it was November the 3rd, 2002. Prior to that, I'd put on some sleazy programs on the TV, you know, or on Sunday, or, you know, I liked All-Star Wrestling. I'd play that kind of stuff. But on this particular Sunday morning, and Tony was in the other room, I was playing with the remotes, and I came across this TV evangelist. And he was a big old guy, or he looked big to me.
Yeah.
And he looked mean, and he was a no-nonsense kind of guy. He looked at me in that screen, and I felt like he was talking straight to me. And he said, if you want to fix your sorry, pathetic, miserable life, he said, there's only one way to do it, and that's to come to Jesus. But it was kind of the way he said it and the way he looked at me that I'll never forget. And it scared me to death. And he said, what you need to do, you need to pray to God right now and ask him to forgive you of your sins and to please fix your life and tell him that you want to accept Christ as your Savior. And that you will be there honoring him for the rest of your life. And he said, I want you to do that. And he says, I want you to do it right now. And here I am on Sunday morning. Tony's in another room, no telling what she's doing. She didn't have any idea I was going through this. Now, I had the TV down pretty low. I didn't want her to hear me.
Yeah.
And I did what he said. And I did. I asked God to forgive me that I had had a horrible life. I've hurt a lot of people, done a lot of really bad stuff, and I asked him to forgive me, and that I wanted Jesus to come into my life, and I did that, and then shortly after that, I heard her coming in, and I switched channels real fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't say anything to her.
Yeah.
And every Sunday, when we'd get up, I would turn into that station, but I'd keep it pretty low. But one Sunday, she came in, and I didn't hear her coming in, and she saw me watching this TV evangelist.
Yeah.
And we watched that thing together. We decided very shortly along that line that we would start visiting churches. And finally, I came to Tony and I said, do you think it's time that we go forward at the invitation? And we did. We went forward and she gave her profession of faith and so on. We were baptized the next week.
Man, that's just such a beautiful story of God never giving up on you or on Tony. And just thanks for sharing that. I knew that after being saved, you've spent the last several years now actively sharing your faith with others. Can you share with us, how did you become involved with the Union Rescue Mission here in Wichita?
We went to a lot of churches. We decided that we liked Calvary. And basically, it's the only church that I've ever been to that I actually can say that I liked, that I actually felt like cared about me.
Hmm.
I come home one day and the preacher's on the phone and he said, I'd like for you to take over the Union Rescue Mission. It meets on the 30th of every month. And he asked me if I'd be willing to do that.
And for those that are listening and aren't familiar, what is the Union Rescue
Mission?
The
Union Rescue Mission is a place where homeless men go 150 to 200 that come in every night, and they feed them. They give them a place to sleep. They have classes that they can go to learn skills, computers and what have you. And they have Bible classes regularly. They have a chapel service every night.
So what was going through your mind when the pastor asked you?
It scared me to death.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about feeling out of place. So I typed up this letter to him telling him why I couldn't do it. And I explained, well, sometimes I get asthma type attacks, and I'm prone to, I can't hear very good, and on, reason why I couldn't do it. Typed it up nice, put it in an envelope. The next day I didn't mail it, and I got to thinking, I'm gonna write him another letter. I don't think he explained it very good, so I wrote another letter. And I said basically the same thing, but I think I made it sound like I was maybe sicker than I really was or something. Tore that one up the next day. So I wrote a third letter, and I said, what I'm going to propose to you, I'll take the mission for 6 months, a 6 month trial basis.
Yeah.
And I said, if it works out, I'll continue it. But if at the end of 6 months I feel like I'm way in over my head and really feel terribly uncomfortable, because I said that's exactly how I'm feeling right now, terribly uncomfortable. I said I'll let you know in plenty of time to find somebody else.
Yeah.
And so he writes me back and he says I accept your offer for you to take it for 6 months. Trial basis. So that's kind of, and in 2 more months I will have had it 6 years.
Wow.
It's been a real exciting time for me.
Do you feel that your past, you know, doing drugs and alcohol and the, you know, all the things that you'd been through, does that help you minister uniquely to the people at the Union Rescue Mission?
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. I've given so many testimonies out there that they have a 90-day turnover. In other words, they'll let them stay for 90 days. And if they're not in an educational program of some kind out there, they're gone. They have to go someplace else. Some of them go to Tulsa. Some of them go to Oklahoma City. So I made up my mind when they changed and decided that in every 90 days it's a new group of people in there.
Yeah.
And I decided every 90 days I'm gonna give my testimony.
Yeah.
Because it's a new group of people, so every 90 days I make a special point to give my own testimony. So I've given a lot of testimonies out there.
Yeah.
Because that's me.
That's who you were.
I should have ended up at the mission.
Yeah.
I know how it feels. Like Mama said, you're going to end up swinging by an end of a rope in the penitentiary by the time you're 18 years old. I get to thinking, man, I was heading down that road. And I look forward to the day maybe a 70-year-old will come up and want to talk to me, but that hadn't happened.
Yeah.
I used to listen to Charles Stanley, and he said statistics have proven that only one person in a million, 70 years of age, ever give their life to Jesus Christ. One in a million.
One in a million.
And I thought, man, I'm a millionaire. Look what's happened to me. That one in a million. I'm one in a million.
Yeah.
If I was my age now, almost 85, I can't even imagine.
Before you were saved.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I think I'd be pretty scared right now, because I'm well aware that I'm living on borrowed time. I mean, there's no question about that. But I'm not scared about it anymore. All my life, I thought Christians were weird and crazy, and now I'm one of them, and I'm kind of weird and crazy. In kind of a nice sort of way.
Well, I want to just thank you so much for just being willing to share your testimony. This has been really encouraging for me to just sit and listen to and hear all this.
I think for anyone listening, Jim's testimony is such an encouragement that God never gives up on the lost. He delights to save the broken, and he makes the sinners whole. For any of our listeners out there who have loved ones that they've shared the gospel with for years to seemingly no avail, remember, our God can do anything, and age does not matter to him. To learn more about Jim, visit our website, compelledpodcast.com, and search for this episode. There, we'll include a download of Jim's written testimony that he wrote himself, which has details that didn't make it into our interview. Right after the music ends, we'll play you a sneak peek from our next episode, but while you wait, you can find other episodes of our podcast at compelledpodcast.com or by subscribing to Compelled on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, and pretty much anywhere else you can find podcasts. New episodes are released every Tuesday. We're rapidly approaching the end of our season, and we actually only have 2 more episodes we're releasing. So if you've enjoyed our show, then please share it with some friends and leave a 5-star rating on iTunes. Or if you don't use iTunes, a 5-star rating on Facebook would be helpful as well. Our show was edited by Zach Fowler, a gifted film editor, visual effects artist, and storyteller. You can find Zach and his work at zachfowlerimagery.com. Our logo was designed by Josiah Jost, an incredibly talented logo designer. You can reach Josiah and view his work at siadesign.com. Our website was created by Ben Billups, a digital developer extraordinaire. You can follow Ben on Instagram at ben.billups. Our media intern is Frank Allegria. You can find him on Twitter at TheFrankAllegria. Our assistant producer is none other than my lovely wife, Sarah Hastings. Without her, this podcast wouldn't exist. And that's it for this episode. Coming up, a sneak peek at next week's interview with John Fornoff, a talented storyteller and former writer for the audio drama series Adventures in Odyssey. You'll hear about John's unique calling into ministry, as well as the challenges and struggles that he's faced. I'm your host, Paul Hastings, and you've been listening to Compelled. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Bottom line is they said I had prostate cancer. With everybody praying and sending in money and sending in cards, and they call me up and they text me and they email me and they Facebook me, and just like, I saw the beauty of the body of Christ, and it's just, I saw it in a real tangible way. It was, it's hard to describe what that did to me.
One last thing before I go. If you'd like to meet up this year in 2024, I will actually be on the road for a few events, either speaking or exhibiting at some conferences. I am still nailing down all the details, but already I know that I'll be at the Texas Homeschool Convention in Fort Worth from April 18th through 20th. The other Texas Homeschool Convention in Houston from May 30th through June 1st, the Home Educators Association of Virginia Convention in Richmond from June 6th through 8th, and there's also the chance that I might be at some other events in Louisville, Kentucky and Nashville, Tennessee later in the year, but we haven't finalized those details yet. If you live near any of those locations, then I'd love to meet you. You can also see our latest up-to-date calendar of events at our website, compelledpodcast.com/events. And I hope to see you there.